I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about one of the landmarks on Indiana's cultural landscape, the Spirit and Place Festival. We're going to talk about what the festival does and what you can do at and with the festival. My guests will be Festival Director Pam Blevins-Hinkle, Festival Selection Committee member Aaron Kelly, and David Hochoy of Dance Kaleidoscope, and of course you. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the Spirit and Place Festival here on No Limits today. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are actually an old, not quite a classmate, but we went to high school together, Pam Blevins-Hinkle, who is the festival director. Pam, welcome to the program.
Thanks for the invitation.
It's good to have you here. Aaron Kelly, who is part of, is a member of the Festival Selection Committee. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
And David Hochoy, who is with Dance Kaleidoscope. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Thank you for the invitation.
It's good to have you here as well. Well, Pam, I'm going to start with you. Tell me a little bit about the genesis and purpose of the Spirit and Place Festival.
Sure. The Spirit and Place Festival was born back in 1996, and it grew out of a project that was run by the Polis Center, part of the IU School of Liberal Arts at IUPUI. They were doing a multidimensional research project that looked at the relationship between urban culture and religion. And as part of a closing event for that project, they had the opportunity to bring Kurt Vonnegut, Dan Wakefield, and John Updike to the stage of Clues Hall for a spontaneous discussion between
with those three. It would have been spontaneous.
And it's still legendary, by the way. People stop me all the time to tell me that they were there when those three remarkable gentlemen talked about the relationship between spirit and place, and spirit in, you know, in this context being as much about faith but also about our identity. And they packed Clues Hall, and there were some public programs that weekend around that same idea. And everybody said, we have to do this again. And here we are 18 years later with a 10-day celebration each year around an annual theme. And there are dozens of programs in many locations throughout the city that invite the public to come and encounter ideas they may not be familiar with, to talk with people they don't know, to meet new people, to go into new neighborhoods. It encourages organizations to work together in new ways so that we have this very rich civic festival that encourages us to come together and to spark collective action for the common good.
Aaron, tell me a little bit about the theme for this year's Spirit and Place.
The theme this year is fantastic. It's risk. And on the selection committee, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about, okay, well, what are we going to look for in terms of a risky program? Are we going to look for programs that are a little dangerous and out there? Or are we going to look for programs that help people think about risk as not so much something that's scary, but maybe something that can lead you into new opportunities? And fortunately, we were provided with numerous applications from around the city that really fit that entire bill of what risk can be. So there's just a fantastic mix of programming.
Why did you choose risk?
Well, I actually wasn't a part of the group that chose risk.
I'll throw that back to Pam.
Yeah, risk was very exciting to us. You know, probably the number one question I get is, how do you pick your themes? And it's actually a very complicated rubric, we're looking for what's going on in the city, what's a buzz, what upcoming events are happening, what ideas flow out of the last festival, what can really provoke us into thinking and acting differently. And our advisory board has lots of discussions, and we brainstorm with community groups about what those themes should be. And last year, our theme was play, and there are many elements of risk in play, so it followed very naturally.
And David, how do you plug into this?
First of all, I have to say that Dance Kaleidoscope has been a participant in the Spirit and Place Festival since it began. We've done many, many projects with Spirit and Place. And of course, this year we felt that it was perfectly suited to us because dancers, you know, take risks all the time. In fact, they take risks every single day. In fact, it's the taking of physical risks that people love to see. So it's also wonderful because dance is not only a physical phenomenon. It has a wonderful kind of a spiritual aspect to it. And it's the blending of the physical and the spiritual that where dance meets that makes a performance very electric. So we're very excited to be participating in the performance this year.
And talk to us a little bit about what you are going to be doing.
Yes, we're doing a project called Making Moving Vision. And we are actually, it's a very unique project. The dancers have been working with blind people. And this is done through Bosmer Enterprises. And they have been working with these blind people. And the blind people have been telling the dancers individually their stories. And what's going to happen next week, Tuesday, is that the dancers are going to dance the stories that these blind people have told them about their lives. And I think some of the blind people are dancing with the dancers. It's really quite extraordinary. And this is taking place at the Athenaeum next week, Tuesday at 7 o'clock. And it's free, so it's fantastic.
And, you know, this is one of the great things about Spirit and Place. So many of our arts organizations and our congregations and civic groups take the opportunity of the themes of Spirit and Place to create really out-of-the-box programming that they don't ordinarily do.
Yes.
So we really get a different look at an organization like Dance Kaleidoscope and how they connect with the community in a new way that's beyond their normal programming. And that's one of the great benefits of the festival.
We are talking about the upcoming Spirit and Place Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Before we go too much further, I mean, we're actually teasing the audience here with all of these great things that are coming. We haven't told them where they can go to find the schedule of events or any of that stuff. We probably ought to do that.
Absolutely.
Real quickly. If you want to do this, find out what's going on as part of the Spirit and Place Festival, where should they go, Pam?
You can go to our website, which is spiritandplace.org. You can also find the complete schedule of the events, which happen November 1st through the 10th, in this week's Nuvo.
And are all of the events, do they have costs attached to them, or are they free to the public? Or
79% of the events are free, and that's really important.
How did you arrive at that number?
Well, we calculated it, of course.
Okay.
Some of the events, particularly performing arts events, have a ticket associated with them, but they're generally very low cost. So it's very important to us that most of these events are accessible to the public.
Aaron, I'm going to ask you, because it seems to me you're sort of a hybrid here, and that why do you think as something that started as kind of a spontaneous thing back in 1996, Spirit and Place now in many ways has become an institution here in the city.
Yeah.
And it did by... Why do you think that happened? What need or hunger did it fill in this community?
Well, I can speak from both the point of view of a participant and as a program creator. I've spent most of my professional career working in museums in the nonprofit sector, so I've created a lot of Spirit and Place programs. And from that perspective, what Spirit and Place offers those of us who work in those institutions is a chance to be bold. It's a chance to find a different partner to create something new like Dance Kaleidoscope is doing. It's really just this wonderful opportunity to be creative and to offer something new to the public. And then as a participant, I think that just fills a need that a lot of us have when we go out and want to be engaged in some of these offerings. You know, we want to see something new and different. And the festival is just this wonderful opportunity that brings people together to explore these topics, but then also to come together in community. You're sharing this experience with an audience, and the conversations that sometimes emerge after a program are just as fantastic as the program itself.
David, what, you know, with the performance where to synthesize or recap, the dancers for Dance Kaleidoscope are going to be working with blind people.
Correct.
To basically tell their stories. They're also going to involve, in some cases, the blind people in the performance.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with that idea, and what do you hope audiences will gain from it?
Well, actually, I think the whole idea came from our education director, Lynn Webster. And it's actually based on another project we did called Turning Points, where we worked with young women who were in a detention center where the dancers got told their stories and then danced the stories of these young women. You know, dance is a very powerful nonverbal mm-hmm. communication. So it's a wonderful tool to try and get these stories out in a different way. So that's how the idea came about, and we thought it was perfect for Spirit in Place. And then I think Bosma Enterprises came up with the funding for it, which was mm-hmm. wonderful. And they are our sponsors for this event, and they're allowing, like one of the participants is one of the blind people is coming all the way from Alaska, and actually, the dancer who is dancing, mm-hmm. Their story is kind of nervous because they only get one day of rehearsal. I think this person is flying in on the Monday to rehearse with them.
Well, so. With air flight schedules these days, that's not a lock.
But either. I think that's fantastic that this person is coming all the way from Alaska to dance and to tell their story too.
Now, is some of the risk involved the sort of internal, you know, dance, at least for the audience, is a visual.
Correct.
Form of communication. I mean, to appreciate it, you have to be able to see it. And you're working with people who at some level can't appreciate the art form because they can't see it. Is that part of the risk?
I think a great part of the risk is that it's a huge experiment. We have no idea if it's going to work or not going to work. It's really uncharted territory. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? Nobody knows what's going to happen, least of all me. So that is an incredible risk.
Does that make you nervous or excited?
Both. I have to say that both. And actually, I'll get a little plug in here too, if you don't mind. I'm also doing another panel on the following day. On Thursday, we're doing The Risk of Pursuing Your Passion, which is Thursday, November the 7th at 7 o'clock at the First Mennonite Church. And it's a panel of people, a chef, a multi-field entrepreneur, an artistic director, me, an author, and a visual artist will discuss the personal, financial, and creative risks we take in pursuing non-traditional work. So, you know, I think that every time that I go into choreographing a new work, it is a risk because I have no idea how it's going to turn out. I just cross my fingers and hope for the best.
We are talking about the Spirit in Place Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Pam, we probably ought to give an overview here of some of the other events, the pieces of the Spirit in Place Festival that people might be interested in.
Sure. We have 30 different programs this year, and I love listening to David talk about his programs because I think what's going to be so magical is that within all the programs, people can encounter our own risk takers here, right, mm-hmm. in the city, the people presenting and talking, and also the people attending. Some folks are going to have to take risks in order to attend an event. There are performances, exhibits, panel discussions, and we have some new things happening this year. We wanted to very intentionally lift up our local risk takers here, and our opening event on Friday the 1st at the IMA is actually a competition among four presenters who are vying for a $20,000 prize. They will present their idea for reshaping notions of race in central Indiana. And one of them will walk away with the $20,000 prize to implement their project. And so that's some up-and-coming risk takers here in the city. The closing event, the public conversation, will feature rather well-known and famous risk takers: Scott Jones, CEO of Cha-Cha, David Baker, the iconic jazz performer, Quaker author Phil Gully, and race car driver Sarah Fisher. And in between are a host of marvelous programs. There are also five events that are competing for the title of the most risky event, and you can go to our website or check out the schedule in Nuvo for more on those. One is a program at the Art Center called Touchy Subjects, about art, sex, and humor. That's a partnership with the Kinsey Institute. Another one is a program that Big Car is doing, and a lot of choices.
We are talking about the Spirit and Place Festival here on No Limits. My guests are Pam Blevins-Hinkle, Aaron Kelly, and David Ho-Choi. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the Spirit and Place Festival. My guests are Pam Blevins-Hinkle, who is the festival director, Aaron Kelly, who is a member of the Festival Selection Committee, and David Ho-Choi, who is with Dance Kaleidoscope. I want to talk a little bit about how you defined risk. I mean, in some ways, we've got David talking about artistic risks to some degree, and I suspect to a degree with untrained people on a stage with trained dancers, some physical risks as well. But how we define that? Pam, I'll start with you.
Sure. Well, we very intentionally don't overdefine it. Each time we select a theme, we're really turning that question back to the community and saying, you tell us what risk means to you. Tell us what risk means in your neighborhood. Tell us what risk means in your artistic discipline. Tell us what it means in your community. And then the festival then becomes this very rich expression of what those communities care about within risk.
Aaron, in terms of, probably ought to ask, what does the Festival Selection Committee do?
Well,
what are your responsibilities?
We have just a good time. we meet a few times to discuss the theme. Pam is correct. The Spirit and Place Festival staff, they let the community kind of help define what risk is. However, they also have provided wonderful training meetings for potential program partners throughout the year to kind of explore the theme a little bit more deeply. They provided a great white paper for individuals to read to help them kind of tease out what risk might mean to the program creator, to their organization. And then as the selection committee, we discuss all of that. We discuss what risk means to us. We discuss what we'd be looking for as attendees. You know, I'm going to go to a lot of these programs. So over the course of 10 days, what do I want to see? And then we get a giant binder full of applications. To be a part of the festival, you do have to apply to be a part. And the committee, we read through all of those. We meet, we discuss them, we debate and debate and debate. We take it very seriously until we get things sort of whittled down to what we think will make a really wonderful 10-day exploration of the theme of risk.
And how do you go? What are the standards? What are the criteria for an event or a program making it onto the Spirit and Place calendar?
Ideally, we're looking for programs that explore the intersection between the arts, humanities, and religion. Not all programs do, but that ideal combination of the arts, humanities, and religion is key to a Spirit and Place festival. And then, of course, we are looking for programs that explore not only the theme, but also, you know, help root the audience in a sense of place. What's special about where this program is taking place? What's special about the city, and why is this happening here? So we are looking for some place-based programming. And then, of course, programs that are different, that are unique, that offer something special to the community to share in.
We are talking about the Spirit and Place Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. David, in terms of creating a program for Spirit and Place, is it easier to do that in response to this idea of a theme? And admittedly, they're fairly broad themes. Or is it easier to just start with a blank slate and say, well, this is the theme I want to explore?
I'd have to say that a blank slate is really harder because it is so frightening. It's the fear of a blank page. You know, you have absolutely no idea of how you're going to start it and how you're going to begin it. I think having the guidance of a theme is fantastic because it gives us an automatic focus. And I want to say that, you know, you just asked what your definition of risk is. I mean, I would have to say that my definition of risk, we take risks every single day. The risk is really not knowing what the outcome of a sequence of actions is going to be. You take a risk every time you go into your car and drive your car because...
Or step behind a microphone, as the case may be.
You could. So those are calculated risks we take every day. And so it's really, really wonderful to have this as a theme for us because it's what makes the arts vibrant. We don't really progress in the arts unless we take risks, because it's through taking risks that we discover things that we don't know about ourselves before. And in order to find those things out, we have to take the risk of plunging into the unknown. And that is actually a really frightening thing. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first came to Dance Kaleidoscope in 1991, I think it was the 400th anniversary of Columbus sailing. Mm-hmm. And I did a piece called First Light because I really wanted to honor how incredibly visionary he must have been, mm-hmm. to set sail, and how risky that was, mm-hmm. because he had no idea of what the outcome was going to be.
Well, David, you just mentioned that you've been at Dance Kaleidoscope for more than 20 years. So your career here has spanned the entire history of the Spirit and Place Festival. Can you talk a little bit about what it's meant to the arts community, what Spirit and Place has meant to the arts community in Indianapolis?
I think it's a very important festival in that it broadens people's outlook on not only themselves, their own community, but how different elements from the community fold into each other, how we contribute to each other as community members, how we communicate with each other, and how we affect each other's consciousness. Because, you know, whether we'd like to admit it or not, we do. Actually, I was accused last night by one of my friends of changing. And I said, absolutely, I changed a lot when I moved to Indianapolis because I was really affected by the community. And, you know, your community does...
In what way?
I became a lot less strident. Mm-hmm. When I first came here from New York, I was a very... it was my angry young man period. Mm-hmm. I wanted to lash out.
We've all had those. So.
And actually, that's really fantastic. It gives a young artist a lot of energy. But being here in this community and working in this community really mellowed me a lot. I think it's really fantastic and very wonderful. I think I'm a better person now.
And I think the festival over the years has actually created a gift for the community, for those of us in that arts and culture world, because it has encouraged us to work together, to just be unique in what we do. And that's a real gift. And I think that's something very unique in Indianapolis, how different organizations will partner with each other. And I do think that's a direct result of the legacy of the Spirit and Place Festival.
Are there other festivals like this around the country?
There are not. There are lots of other arts and humanities type festivals around the nation, but the two things that really make us very distinctive are the intentional inclusion of religion and this grassroots model that relies on the community to create the programming.
Why does it work here? and it wouldn't work in other places.
Well, you know, I've reflected on that a lot, and I do get calls from other cities who see Spirit in Place and want to know how to do it. I do think there's this energy, this collaborative soil here in Indianapolis. You know, there's a history of public-private partnership. We're used to getting things done and make and do with what we have and finding other people to help us, and it's really part of the city culture, and I think it's one of the reasons that makes Spirit in Place Festival work.
We are talking about the Spirit in Place Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter, as a listener named Sasha has. At WFYI, Sasha says, looking forward to Map My Risk event, seeing Will Shorts and Spirited Chase, among others. Pam, Aaron, what is the Map My Risk event?
The Map Your Risk, it's actually called Choose Your Adventure, Map Your Risk. It's a really creative program from Big Car and the Polis Center, and they invited people to fill out a survey online that was basically testing their risk profile.
It was a risk assessment.
A risk assessment. And then they got some adventure assignments. Mm-hmm. And then at the event, they're going to talk about those assignments. And if you didn't have a chance to take the profile, it'll still be a great event to go to.
What sort of adventure assignments are we talking about here? Is it, you know?
It sounds like Survivor.
Yeah, I was going to say, are we booting people off the island? Or? Yeah,
no.
Well, I think trying new foods is part of it, going into new neighborhoods that you've never been
exactly.
to, just exploring the city, which is a risk for some people. Some people, you know, are very comfort in their little area, and they don't want to go to the south side or the north side, and programs like this are going to encourage people to push their boundaries a bit.
And then the other thing I want to talk about real quickly is the unique qualities. How has Spirit in Place, the festival, changed the city? I mean, if we're talking about this as a dialogue, and really that we're establishing it as a dynamic where things flow back and forth, we talked about the fact that Indianapolis, the fact that Spirit in Place is rooted here, has an impact on the festival and has shaped it. How's the corresponding way? How has Spirit in Place shaped the city? I'm going to let each of you have a shot at that. I'll start with Aaron.
Well, most directly with me, Spirit in Place, on a volunteer basis, I'm one of the co-founders of Indie Talks. And Indie Talks is this collaborative nature organizations. We get together, we talk, we think about how we can create programming that the community will enjoy. It's all very collaborative, very grassroots. We pick a common theme every year. We explore it throughout the year. That's directly modeled after this this kind of ethos that Spirit in Place has in terms of being open and accessible and welcoming to all and valuing the opinions and the expertise that all the different partners can bring to the table. So I think for me personally, Spirit in Place has been a great training ground to develop great programs, but then also to kind of take things a step further and say, what can I do on my end to try to bring people together and to continue to foster this collaborative nature of the city?
Mm-hmm. Pam.
Yeah, over the years, you know, Spirit in Place has birthed new organizations, new initiatives, curricula, documentaries, all resources that are still available to the community. One example from 2010, when our theme was food, we had a conversation on food and social justice, and the mayor of Southport at that time met someone in the local food movement, and 2 years later, they opened a new urban farm and garden center in Southport in revitalizing an abandoned property. And those two people met at a Spirit in Place event and got excited about each other's work and came together to make something happen. And we know that those things occur all the time with Spirit in Place events.
Mm-hmm. And David, how has Spirit in Place shaped the city?
Well, I'll tell you a story. I have some friends who just moved here from Chicago about 5 or 6 years ago, and they say that the great difference between Chicago and Indianapolis is that they can get close to the arts and to the artists who are participating in the arts organizations. And so I think that since I've been here for 22 years, actually, I think there's much more of a connection between the community and the arts organizations. I think like a wonderful organization like Big Car has evolved because the community was ready for it. And I think festivals like Spirit in Place really open the community up to to possibilities like that. I think we love the fact that we want creative people in this environment. We want people who think out of the box. We want someone who is going to make a difference in our lives. We want a quality of life. We love our quality of life. We treasure it. And we want to make it better all the time. And we know that that it's by collaborating in festivals like this that open us up to the possibilities, the infinite possibilities.
We are talking about the Spirit and Place Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Pam, how long have you been involved with Spirit and Place?
This is my eighth year.
And what drew you to it?
Oh, Spirit and Place is this magical combination of everything I care about. So I've been a lifelong arts administrator and a lifelong musician, and my spiritual walk is very important to me. So I get to, it's the best of my professional and personal interests.
And how, in terms of shaping a festival, we've talked about how, you know, the selection committee goes through individual program or event ideas. I'm assuming that there's some thought that goes into what the mix is going to be as well, and how all of that, well, let me take a step back. In your mind, what defines a successful Spirit and Place Festival?
Wow, what a great question.
Yeah.
A great Spirit and Place Festival would have programs that appeal to all ages. So we'd have some just plain fun, zany events. We'd have some deeply intellectual and thoughtful events with new ideas. We'd have arts and culture programs that had never been seen before in the community that brought us together in completely different ways. We'd have events with organizations collaborating who you'd never expect to collaborate. And you'd have, let's see, what else, Aaron, would be an idea?
I actually think you're naming things we have. I mean,
yeah, I know.
So
I guess we're doing a good job.
We're doing a good job, yeah. It's a great mix. I think, as Pam alluded to, if you are interested in going to a lecture, hearing someone who has a certain level of expertise in a topic speak, that's in the festival. If you want to watch a dance performance, that's there. A theatrical performance, that's there. If you want something that's more interactive, something that's more physical, that's in the festival. So that creating that mix is an important component of the selection process. And fortunately, we live in a city that gets it and that naturally provides this mix to us every year when different groups come together to create these programs.
I will say that sometimes the themes direct some of that programming too. This year with the risk theme, we actually have fewer programs that are appropriate to younger audiences, whereas last year when the theme was play, we had lots of children's programming. And those really are directed by the theme itself.
What are some of the unusual collaborations that you talk, places where you say you've got organizations or groups collaborating that you would never see otherwise?
Do you mind if I give an example from the past?
Sure.
So this, I used to work for the Indiana Historical Society, and a few years ago, the theme was Food for Thought, which allowed me to partner with local brewers, and we did an entire program on how beer is food, and we shared stories about beer. So
that one was well attended.
It was well attended. It was a lot of fun. I think it was a collaboration that many people kind of scratched their heads at first, but it was a good time, and the festival's what allowed me to bring all that together.
We're talking about the Spirit and Place Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. David, who would you, in terms of that spirit, is there an organization or group that Dance Kaleidoscope would like to collaborate with that you never have been able to?
You know, that's that you're putting me on the spot here.
Yeah, that's sort of what they pay me for.
We've collaborated with many, many different organizations over the 22 years that I have been here. So I think that actually this collaborating with Bosma Enterprises and doing the blind vision program is really, really quite extraordinary. I think it's a perfect pairing of the performing arts with some people from the community. I would love to see more community involvement with the arts, or maybe some of the universities.
Mm-hmm. And Pam, it looks like you've highlighted a collaboration here.
Yeah, just an example I was going to give from this year is a program called Risky Business, and it's a partnership between St. Luke's United Methodist Church, Central Indiana Women's Business Center, and Dress for Success and Humanity First USA, and that's a program about the power of microfinance for women worldwide.
And where would they go to find that?
They can go to our website at spiritandplace.org for the details.
We are talking about the Spirit and Place Festival here on No Limits. My guests are Pam Blevins-Hinkle, Aaron Kelly, and David Ho Choi. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the Spirit and Place Festival today on No Limits. My guests are Festival Director Pam Blevins-Hinkle, Festival Selection Committee member Aaron Kelly, and Dance Kaleidoscope's David Ho Choi. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Frank, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I was just curious, are there fees for outside organizations to participate? And if so, what are they?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Frank. Pam.
Sure. Yes, there is a fee. Organizations pay a $400 fee to participate.
So any organization, and I probably have been remiss in my journalistic training. Normally you're supposed to follow the money. Where does the bulk of the funding come for the Spirit and Place Festival?
It comes from the community. Over 95% of our budget comes from charitable contributions.
And how large a budget is it?
It's about $350,000, so it's a small budget.
Okay. And how large is your staff?
50% of the staff is here with you today. So there's, there's two full-time staff, and we do have the support of some interns from IUPUI.
Well, and we talked about it. I want to get to the spirit of Frank's question, too. When you talked about all of the applications to do a program, how should they go about applying to be part of the Spirit and Place Festival?
Sure. In November, generally each year, we release some information about what the next year's theme is and the application guidelines. And then in January, there are some meetings to help people understand that more. And as Aaron was talking about, to tease out some of the ideas within the theme. And the application deadline is generally sometime in the first week of March.
Have you decided on the theme for next year already?
Mm-hmm. We have. We've decided on all the themes through 2016.
Wow.
What is the theme for next year?
For 2014, the theme is Journey. For 2015, which is the festival's 20th year, the theme is Dream. And for the bicentennial year, our theme is Home.
So we've got those three, Journey, Dream, and Home.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, in terms of Aaron, and have you started thinking about what those should mean if people want to apply?
Oh, I get the themes and I start dreaming up my own programs in my head. I see Journey being a fantastic year that will help people explore the community, potentially the state, getting out a little bit more. I think there are lots of connections to be made in terms of a spiritual journey one takes, a professional journey. I would love for the band Journey to come here. I think would just be outstanding.
That would be outstanding.
And David, had you heard these themes before?
I have not. I think they're fantastic. They're very evocative. I mean, you know, and I've done so many pieces that are about journeys that we do.
When do you start the process? As you've said, Dance Kaleidoscope's been involved in every Spirit and Place Festival. This will be the 18th year. When do you start the process of figuring out what kind of program you're going to offer?
Very far out. I mean, it has to, because the application process, I mean, I can't remember how many months in advance, but it has to happen pretty far out. So we have to start dreaming of these projects pretty far in advance.
And the planning cycle for us is about 18 months. to make a festival happen. So we're already working on 2014.
So in some ways, this, you know, the 2013 one's kind of already metaphorically in the rearview mirror for you guys.
Very true.
You're looking ahead at the next one. When did you start on the one that you're, David, that you're going to be doing with the blind people and exploring?
Well, the dancers started working with them, I guess, about a couple of months ago. And of course, this week they're frantically working them now to make their performances really good. But the thing that's been hard is that they have to squeeze all of this in between their regular dance kaleidoscope duties, which is taking class and being in rehearsal every day. And plus, a lot of them do teaching on their own outside of the dance kaleidoscope schedule. So they've had to really put in a lot of extra work for it.
Did you choreograph the piece?
I did not choreograph any of these pieces. The dancers have been putting these, and that's another wonderful thing about it, is that it's the dancers' own choreographies that have been inspired by the stories of these blind people, and I think it's fantastic because it adds a whole other layer of creativity to the project.
In terms of the clearly then they had to do some interviewing and sit down with the subjects. Was it one person per dancer?
Yes, it's one-on-one, and the dancers have had one-on-one sessions with the blind people, and then they have been working out how they're going to tell the stories them.
Are there, in terms of, you mentioned that some of the blind people are actually going to be helping with the performance,
yes,
going to be performing
yes.
themselves. I would think, obviously I'm a sighted person, but I would have some trepidation about getting up in front of people and performing with professional dancers. I'd think the chances that I would look foolish would be pretty good.
Well, that's the risk.
Case, is there, yeah.
That's the risk
you
take.
No. In this case, it would be a guarantee, but there would be no risk involved at all. I would look foolish. But I guess what I'm saying with this is, was there any trepidation on the part of the subjects, you know, of these pieces, the blind people saying, I'm not so sure.
You know,
about
that I don't know. I don't know because I haven't asked the dancers that question specifically, but I'm sure there has been, and I'm sure there will be. Everybody gets stage fright. But I'll tell you a wonderful story. Martha Graham always loved telling us this story. She said that when people went backstage to ask Enrico Caruso, the famous tenor, they would go backstage and they would say, Mr. Caruso, why do people pay so much money to hear you sing? He would say to them, they pay to hear the fear in my voice. So
we are talking about the Spirit and Place Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Aaron, what program here? We'll take David off the spot. We'll assume that, you know, that Dance Kaleidoscope's performance and his panel discussion are going to be two of the highlights.
Yeah.
But what is another one that you're really looking forward to?
You know, actually, I've been sitting here thinking, I hope he doesn't ask me that question, because there are so many that I want to go to myself. I have to say, in full disclosure here, I'm one of the judges for the kickoff tomorrow night, the $20,000 competition about race. I'm really excited about that. There's some amazing proposals that people are going to hear tomorrow night, so I'm very excited for that one. I'm also intrigued by something called the Hungry Games. And this is based off of the book, The Hunger Games. Tributes are not going to compete to the death. However, tributes are going to...
Yeah, I suspect there are laws against that.
Yeah, probably.
But
different tributes, contestants from around the city have been pulled together. It's been put together by No Exit Performance and the Athenaeum Foundation and Q Artistry. And they're going to sort of, I don't know, combating these physical and mental challenges, but it's all in an effort to raise awareness and to raise, I believe, food and dollars for to fight hunger here in Indianapolis. So I like that program. I think it'll be a great, fun thing for people to do, but there's also a really good outcome that I think will come from it.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener who wants to know more about the public conversation. Pam, could you talk about that?
Sure. It's a proud tradition of the festival from that very first conversation with those three amazing authors. So it'll be moderated by Kevin Armstrong. And these four incredible people, Scott Jones, David Baker, Phil Gulley, and Sarah Fisher, will have a spontaneous dialogue about the role of risk in our individual life, in our community life. We'll talk about what risk means to Hoosiers, what risk means here in the city of Indianapolis and in central Indiana, and the audience will have an opportunity to ask their own questions as well.
How do you build that panel year after year? I mean, you get folks who come in from entirely different walks of life there.
That's what makes it so fun. Mm-hmm. We work to have 3 to 4 people who come from very different walks of life. Somebody who can talk from a religious perspective, humanities are and the arts, and from business, and each theme helps us think a little bit more about that. So we're looking for people who can talk very differently. The speakers love it because they don't get to share a stage very often with such a diverse group. And they talk to each other, and we learn so much just from hearing them share their thoughts. And the public conversation also models civil dialogue. That's part of its purpose.
David, in the years that you have been involved with Spirit in Place, what is the program or performance that sticks in your memory the most? I'm going to talk about the best one because that's like asking you to choose your favorite child.
I think the one I'm going to tell you about is the very first one we did, and I think actually it was the first year of Spirit in Place. We did a lecture demonstration in the Martha Graham technique actually at the Indiana Historical Society. And it was the first time that we'd ever attempted anything like that. And people were just bowled over after it because it was an explanation of how we worked as dancers. And we did it on the stage. And I remember a lot of people coming up to me and saying, wow, David, this was just very, very powerful. And you have to do it again in the theater, which we did. Mm-hmm. But this was the first time we ever did it.
Have you thought about perhaps doing it again for the 20th anniversary that's coming up? Or?
Well, it depends on what the theme is.
The theme is dream.
Yeah.
I remember. I paid attention. So, Pam, what's the most memorable program you would say? And I'm not going to say best or worst because that gets into qualitative things.
Right.
And the memorable piece of it can be something, you know, you bring your own life experience to it. It can be something that speaks to you because of...
Sure. Yeah, well, I actually have two favorite, and I'm a musician and artist, so they're both arts events that the Indianapolis Museum of Art did. One was a Buto dance performance, and I can't now remember who the artist was, but I can remember actually gasping at the end of it because of the surprise of the experience. And the other was this amazing performance by the Vienna Vegetable Orchestra. Yes, I said vegetable. Vienna Vegetable Orchestra, which was 13 musicians from Vienna who played cabbages and onions and zucchinis and carrots that had been transformed into instruments. And the quality of that performance, the caliber of the music, was stunning. I have never looked at a head of cabbage the same way since. It was thrilling.
Aaron, same question to you. Most memorable.
Last year, I can't remember the group who did it either, but it was at Garfield Park, and it was the Great Pumpkin Fling thing. And there are these giant catapults that were created, and there's a group. It was all about STEM education. It was all about demonstrating to kids how engineering and mathematics, how it's important, and how you can do cool things if you have this knowledge, like create giant catapults and fling pumpkins, you know, 50 feet in the air and have them crash down and explode. And it was fantastic.
Who cleaned up afterwards?
I don't know.
Yeah, and that was Ivy Tech Community College of Central Indiana that did that program.
Who were the first year? Have you got folks who are participating for the first time in Spirit in Place this year?
Oh, I'm sure that we do. Actually, each year about 40% of our organizations are brand new to the festival. I'm not sure. I can name one from memory for you right now. Can you think of any, Aaron? Partners? There's so many. We have over 75 different organizations who are collaborating on this year's program. So I've yet to master memorization.
How many different programs?
30 programs.
30 programs.
30 programs in 10 days.
So 3 a day, basically, right?
Well, it never works out that way.
It never does. But and, you know, the range of options dealing with risk is what are What are some of the programs? Can you give me some of the names so that we can give people a sample of...
Sure. There's a play that's going to be taking place at the Oaklandon Civic Theater. The night Thoreau spent in jail, which is about David Thoreau. Now I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, aren't I?
Henry David Thoreau.
Okay.
Yeah.
but it's all about the risk
Ralph
you take.
Ralph Waldo Emerson had to bail him out.
Right. So it's about the risk you take, I think, through engaging in civil disobedience. So that's one of the... Format is a play. Civil disobedience and risk is the topic there.
There are also some science and health programs that are interesting. There's one about scientific heroism and the risks of biological research. And there's a one about knowing your own health risks. Does it, in this day and age of personalized, tailor-made medicine, do we really want to know everything about our health risks? There's also another program that might win the best title award called Get Rubbed the Right Way, which is about the massage therapy, and that's a very intimate encounter, and how you look at that encounter and what's appropriate and how to address areas of discomfort. So that's going to be an interesting and creative program. Another great one is called Leaving My Religion, James Mulholland will share his own journey from evangelical Christian to progressive to non-religious.
Is there a program here that's part of it that, in keeping with the theme of risk, you think, oh, I'm not sure how that's going to turn out or how well that is going to work?
You know,
what is the riskiest program? I'll frame that another way. Oh. What is the riskiest program in a festival that is dedicated to risk?
Well, we have five that are highlighted that we think are really competitive in that area, and that's where they have this risk prize. So there are five programs that we think are particularly risky. And one is choose your adventure, map your risk, the Hungry Games, touchy subjects, art, sex, and humor, Leaving My Religion, the risk and rewards of becoming non-religious, and then actually WFYI's program, Spirited Chase, where participants receive mystery locations, and they have to get themselves there throughout the day, and then they will engage in different sorts of programming that explores the theme of risk.
David, would you talk a little bit about the panel that you're going to be on? I know we've emphasized the Dance Kaleidoscope performance of the Blind People's Journeys.
Well, this panel is called The Risk of Pursuing Your Passion. And I think what's wonderful about it is that there are so many people from very different walks of life who are going to we're all going to talk about what made us who we are today. And because, you know, it's so interesting to find out how we became the professionals we are today, because every single one of us, I think, goes through a risk-taking period where we don't know what the future is going to bring for us. I remember when I was a very young man, much younger, worrying about what is going to happen to my future. I mean, what am I going to do when I when I grow up? And I think it's going to be really interesting to hear how we dealt with it, how we dealt with the risk.
And what brought you to this point, basically.
Yeah. And did it make us stronger? Did it make us, did we evolve as creatures through it?
Pam, give the URL, if you would, please, one more time so that people know where to go to find this.
Certainly. More information can be found at spiritandplace.org.
You have been listening to No Limits. My guests are Pam Blevins-Hinkle, Aaron Kelly, David Hachoy. Thank you very much for joining us. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you again for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.